Hey guys, Rad Rob here. Before we get started, I want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is a marketplace that connects podcasters like you and I to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities. You can do host read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, pre-rolls, mid-rolls, post-rolls, so many different ways to hook up with amazing sponsors that you and I can promote. And with Podcorn, there is no middleman. Podcasters of all sizes can browse and choose opportunities right on the platform. The best part about it is you can set your own rates. Whatever you think your worth is, give it a shot. Throw it out there. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe they'll accept it. Maybe they won't. Then at least you know where you have a starting point. You can also collaborate with brands directly without any exclusivities at all. The best thing about that as well is you never give up any rights to your podcasts. Podcorn is here to support you at every step of the way and ensure that you are protected and compensated. Podcorn's mission is to give podcasters transparency, creative freedom, and full control of how and when we, you and I, monetize. Guys, you know me. I would not support anything that I didn't believe in. So you can trust in what I say, that Podcorn is the best way to hook up with sponsors and get paid. So once again, I would like to thank Podcorn for sponsoring this episode. Go to podcorn.com to start hooking up.
The following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Rad Rob Radio Network.
Hey guys, Rad Rob here. Before we get started, I want to let you know that this episode is sponsored by Podcorn. Podcorn is a marketplace that connects podcasters like you and I to amazing podcast sponsorship opportunities. You can do host read ads, interview segments, topical discussions, pre-rolls, mid-rolls, post-rolls, so many different ways to hook up with amazing sponsors that you and I can promote. And with Podcorn, there is no middleman. Podcasters of all sizes can browse and choose opportunities right on the platform. The best part about it is you can set your own rates. Whatever you think your worth is, give it a shot. Throw it out there. You never know what's going to happen. Maybe they'll accept it. Maybe they won't. Then at least you know where you have a starting point. You can also collaborate with brands directly without any exclusivities at all. The best thing about that as well is you never give up any rights to your podcasts. Podcorn is here to support you at every step of the way and ensure that you are protected and compensated. Podcorn's mission is to give podcasters transparency, creative freedom, and full control of how and when we, you and I, monetize. Guys, you know me. I would not support anything that I didn't believe in. So you can trust in what I say, that Podcorn is the best way to hook up with sponsors and get paid. So once again, I would like to thank Podcorn for sponsoring this episode. Go to podcorn.com to start hooking up with sponsors right now.
Welcome to RTW Rewind. Rad Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. We are back. Rad Mania kicked my ass, but I took a couple weeks off. I am here for your listening pleasure. I am your humble host, Radicalized Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody's doing well all around the world, and thank you for being here. My special guest this week has been on the show a couple of times. He is the Doctor of Desire. He is the master, the ruler, the leader of hitting the marks. Don't tell RBV that I said that, but he is the one and only Dr. Michael Tiberius Johnson Jargo III. What's going on, buddy? Thanks for being here.
Hey, man, you know, when I get a message from Rad Rob and it's like, hey, do you want to do a show? And it's like, yep, sure do. What do you want to talk about? I agree to the show before I even know the topic because I just I enjoy coming on and shooting the breeze with my friend Rad Rob. welcome back. Well-earned vacation. I kind of hear you, man. Coming out of WrestleMania every year, I'm just like, you know, like 2 weeks or so. Just give me like a couple of weeks. I just need to decompress a little bit. So welcome back, and welcome back to the world of wrestling. I'm happy that you asked me to do this.
Absolutely, man. I'm always happy to work with you. I always have a good time talking to you. And yeah, I mean, when you do 7 days of shows every freaking, I don't just do it for that. I was coming off of Rad Rumble too. So, I mean, right. I had about 2 months in between. So I did, you know, 7 shows a week for that and 7 shows a week for this. But
I think I did 13 podcasts WrestleMania week.
That's quite a bit. Yes. So you got me beat. You got me now. And see now.
Yeah, but you were producing the shows too. People don't realize there's a hell of a difference when you're the guy hosting and producing versus the guy who's just coming on to run your mouth. There's a whole lot of difference there, man.
Fair. That's fair. That's fair. But yeah, you did agree to the show without knowing the topic. We could have been talking about inflatable dicks for an hour, and you're like, all right, let's fucking do it. So
I am happy to do an entire hour on Joey Ryan's appearance at All In. I am totally down for it. It was one of the highlights of the night. Phalluses everywhere.
Yeah, and this is completely off topic, but that's how the show goes. But how was he not canceled because of that? I mean, I know he's done plenty of other things since then, but how was he not canceled from the get-go?
You know, I have a very strange opinion of Joey Ryan, because I have a lot of respect for Joey Ryan, which a lot of people probably do not expect coming from me. Right. Because I'm not a comedy wrestling. I'm not into like that super gimmicky kind of stuff. I'm the work rate guy, right?
Yeah.
But I had the opportunity to sit down and talk with Joey Ryan once. And Joey Ryan is one of the smartest people that I have talked to as far as a wrestling mind goes. Complete douchebag. But he has a very good wrestling mind. Very much like Jim Cornette, right? You know, right. I mean, it's just kind of the way it goes. But his explanation, you know, Joey Ryan could work. I've seen Joey Ryan like work in like serious matches and whatnot. The dick flip got over. He didn't have to take bumps and he got paid a whole bunch of money. So I think he just kind of ran with it. And you know what? And all in all, it was pretty freaking brilliant.
It was. And I will always credit him for getting himself over in the most ridiculous fashion possible and Absolutely. Keep getting booked. And that's what people wanted to see. Even to the fact, if you believe the rumors, that WWE was very close to bringing him in at one time.
The first time I saw Joey Ryan was on WWE TV.
Oh, was he on WWE TV?
And that was long before he was doing the dick flip shit.
Okay. But I heard they were actually thinking of bringing him in once they already had seen, you know, all the stuff that he was doing, and they still considered bringing him in because
what is the difference between Steve Corino, who is under WWE umbrella, he's a producer at NXT, and Joey Ryan? I mean, they both did basically the same thing, just at completely opposite ends of the spectrum.
Sure.
Like what one was more of a jokey kind of weird, quirky kind of character. And then you had Steve Corino, who was just violent.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But as far as what they did inside the business, very, very similar.
That's true. And they both had the ability to get over, which.
And I love Steve Corino. He's like one of my top five favorite wrestlers ever.
I do too. He's very, very good. I'm not going to say he's underrated, because Chad from Two Man Power Trip would say he's perfectly rated. But in any event.
Depends on where you rate him, I guess.
That's true. All right. So getting back to the topic at hand, I'm doing a little bit of a mini series on the lost art of selling. And I've already done the lost art of selling as a worker. I now want to take a deep dive into the lost art of selling as an announcer or commentator. And as soon as I mention that to you, you're like, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
That's definitely something that's lacking today. I'll use WWE for an example. It's not as bad now as it was maybe 5 years ago when they had tout and all this other shit that they're, you know, Michael Cole was trying to spout out all the time, you know, tweets and trending shit and tout and all the info. No one's paying attention to the matches. But I mean, even with Cole now or Tom Phillips now, which look, they're great at what they do, right? If that's your style, if that's your gimmick, if that's what the boss wants, they're doing a good job. But I miss the old days, Jargo. I miss I miss Jim Ross before Jim Ross kind of got cranky and just, I don't want to say ornery, but I mean, I think he's changed since his wife has passed away. I think he's a different person now.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? And understandably so. I mean, like, as much as people want to kind of rag on Jim Ross for
he's had
for
a lot of shit to go through,
the old man. He's dealing with a lot of demons. When I listen to Grilling JR, that's what I hear is a guy who's still kind of struggling with all of that.
Yeah, I can't listen to it anymore because of that fact.
When it comes to WWE, I feel like we have to take WWE out and kind of put them in their own category, because we know that the WWE commentators are so produced by Vince and The Office that we really don't know what Mitchell Cole's personality is. Mitchell Cole's personality is whatever Vince tells him to do. And unfortunately, even when you find a good commentator, whether it be somebody like Corey Graves, who I thought was very, very good when he was on the way up, or Samoa Joe, who I thought was a very good commentator until he ran into WWE producing.
Nigel McGuinness did great work in NXT when he was there.
Yep. Even Mauro when he was in NXT versus Mauro when he was on SmackDown, two completely different people, right? And it's just the way that you're being produced. Right. I hate the way that WWE produces their announcers, and I always have. That being said, with WWE being the only game in town for so long, I think people just kind of thought, oh, well, that's how you have to do it now. Because when I listen to AEW, they make a lot of the same mistakes to me on commentary that WWE makes. Ring of Honor, very much the same way. MLW, very much the same way. Lucha Underground, for some unbeknownst reason to me, had Matt Stryker, who I just absolutely cannot stand as a play-by-play guy. But Vampiro was very, very good. But, you know, there was nobody producing Vampiro. And I feel like that's the real problem. We don't know how good these commentators actually could be if they would just take the shackles off of them a little bit.
Right. No, you're exactly right about that. Now, you know, I go back 30 some odd years. So, you know, when I first started watching wrestling, it's Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura on Superstars. It's Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan on Wrestling Challenge and on Primetime. In 89, when Tony Schiavone came in, it was him and Lord Alfred Hayes, or it was Sean Mooney and Lord Alfred Hayes at some point, you know, or they do house shows and they would have, you know, secondary announcers or the MSG network. But I mean, they had very, very talented people that knew the wrestling business and knew how to tell a story. And then on the flip side, you obviously had guys like Lance Russell in Memphis. You had Bob Caudle, I think was in either Georgia or the Carolinas, and he came to NWA. Jim Ross and Bob Caudle to this day is still one of my favorite combos. And I don't think they get talked about nearly enough. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with any of that from around, you know, 89, 90. But, you know, that was a whole, there was WWF, which I thought Jesse and Vince were great. I thought Gorilla and Bobby were great. But when you go to the NWA and eventually WCW, it was a whole different kind of storytelling with JR.
I grew up a NWA WCW fan. And I've always been more of a work rate guy.
Yeah.
So those early days of Jim Ross, I just absolutely love, because Jim Ross calls things, or called things at least at one time, very much like it was a sport.
Yeah.
And knowing now how big of a sports fan of the Sooners that JR is, it makes sense. It makes complete sense. He tried to call things like it was a football game. And I absolutely loved it. Throughout the course of time, though, as sports entertainment took over, it was like we went to a narrator of the soap opera rather than a play-by-play guy that was actually just calling the matches. And I feel like that's where the big disconnect is for me.
Yeah, I can see that. And especially when, you know, JR would be like, Lex Luger, 6'5", you know, 270-plus, you know, linebacker for the blah, 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 blah. And he would give everybody's college stats. And I know when he got to WWE, Vince McMahon put the kibosh on that pretty quick, because Vince is like, nobody gives a shit about that football stuff, pal. What the fuck?
What's going on, everybody? My name is Vampiro. This right here is the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. Tune in, get tuned up, get informed, and enjoy the podcast.
RTW Rewind.
For some reason, the Western promotions just don't go with it. Like, you listen to Kevin Kelly when he does commentary now for New Japan Pro Wrestling. He calls it like a sport.
I love Kevin Kelly.
I mean, you've got a historian, and then you'll have, you know, whoever your second guy in the booth is, your heel announcer, whether it's Rocky Romero or Gino Gambino or Don Callis. But I mean, like, when Kevin Kelly and Don Callis were calling New Japan, that was the best commentary team on the face of the planet. When Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino were calling Ring of Honor, that was freaking incredible stuff.
Agreed.
That's what I feel like is missing, because they get so invested in the actual action because you're calling the match rather than trying to tell a narrative over the top of what you're seeing with your eyes.
Right. Now, on the WWF side, I was a big fan of Vince McMahon as an announcer in the early days, because who better to put over the product than a guy that runs it? You know what I mean? And nobody really knew that at the time. You know, everything was kayfabe before the advent of the internet. And Jesse was a perfect heel announcer to play off of that. And Jesse used to give him shit all the time. Can you think of that nowadays? Like, if you were telling your boss some of the things that Jesse were to tell Vince, but it's all in character. It's all in fun, but he ribbed the fuck out of Vince relentlessly.
I think the thing that was so great about Vince was he knew the story that he was trying to tell. You know what I mean? There was no interpretation to it. It was just Vince telling you, this is what I'm going for here, you know? Yeah. And then it was, does it work or does it not work? You know, for me, Bobby Heenan, and I have often made the comment that Bobby Heenan is the greatest heel of all time. And I say that whether it was as a commentator or as a manager, Hulkamania does not happen without Bobby Heenan in any way, shape, or form. And when you look at all the different eras and all the different partners that Bobby Heenan worked with, he was vital to that entire product, because he would always justify what the heel was doing. He would rag on the babyface unless it was Hulk Hogan, because he just hated Hulk Hogan all the way around. Whether Hulk Hogan was a good guy, whether Hulk Hogan was a bad guy, Bobby Heenan hated Hulk Hogan, and Bobby Heenan was right.
Yeah, no, he was right. So, I mean, do you know if that was actual personal hatred or jealousy? Or,
well, I mean, I don't know, because it's so funny when you look back at,
because it seemed natural, right?
When you look at the rise of Hogan, even in the AWA, the guy on the other side of the ring was Bobby the Brain Heenan. And it was just whichever member of the Heenan family was going after Hulk Hogan. But the real rivalry was always Hogan and Heenan. And then when they brought that to the WWF, Hulkamania explodes, brother. And then even when you get to the famous NWO call, whose side is he on?
That's right.
Now, a lot of people say that Bobby Heenan blew that moment. But when you look at the reality of the situation, Bobby Heenan did not trust Hulk Hogan. He hadn't trusted Hulk Hogan for 20 freaking years. And he just assumed that Hulk Hogan was coming out to be a slime ball. And Bobby Heenan was right.
That's a great point. And, you know, actually, that's something in all my years, I never even really thought of that. And I was kind of on the fence, too. Like, did Bobby know? You know, did Bischoff swears that nobody else knew about that except for a couple people, and the announcers weren't part of it. But you're right. Like, Bobby Heenan calling it, you put yourself in his shoes. You're right. After all those years of playing the foil to Hulk Hogan and having Heenan to deal with all that, he knew. Yeah. That's so smart. That's why you're the doctor. But no, that's really smart, dude. That's funny. See, I learn something new all the time. This is why I love working with people at Hameen, because we have such a talented cast and crew here. I'm always sitting under the learning tree, even as a 44-year-old guy who thinks he knows it all. I don't, obviously. That's a fantastic point. I appreciate you bringing that up, because that never even crossed my mind. That just shows you the genius of Bobby Heenan.
But it's also directly what we're talking about is the selling of the commentary.
Right.
Bobby Heenan sold that story, and he sold it his entire career. It was Bobby Heenan versus Hulk Hogan, regardless of which side of the ledger everybody was on. But you look at all of Hogan's greatest moments throughout all of history, and somehow Bobby Heenan is always right there.
That's true. That's a very good point. I've heard mixed reviews over Gorilla Monsoon. I think when I mentioned him to Ben was said he doesn't really, I could be wrong. He's probably going to fucking slap the shit out of me if I'm wrong and it wasn't him, but I'm just going to say for argument's sake that it was Ben that I heard this from. He wasn't a fan of Gorilla because Gorilla was always putting himself over. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I could see that. I could see having that opinion of Gorilla Monsoon. He is an interesting one because we know that Gorilla was office. We do know that Gorilla was a former worker, but at a certain point, it was almost like he was working even as a commentator because of mm-hmm. that relationship between him and Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
So it was almost like having two color guys. You know what I mean? Like he was doing play by play, but he was more of a color guy than he was a play by play man. So Gorilla's really, really hard for me to kind of analyze.
It just seemed like he always had to get his shit in. You know what I mean? Like he had all his catchphrases, all his different sayings and all that. And then working Bobby, you know, like he was mm-hmm. the face, Bobby was the heel. They were clearly working each other. And sometimes I think, and now while I enjoy it, I think they had a fantastic relationship. And obviously we know they were best friends, but you're not putting over the talent in the ring at all times.
Would it have worked better?
You're fighting with each other and not putting over the people that you're supposed to be right. putting over.
Would it have worked better if there was a third man in the booth? Yeah, because there's been all this talk about, you know, two-man booth, three-man booth. Hell, sometimes AEW runs with like four or five freaking guys in the booth. Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But with those two guys, I almost feel like having somebody like a Jim Ross in the middle, having somebody like a Mitchell Cole in the middle, kind of playing the straight play-by-play guy.
Right.
And then you have your baby face color and you have your heel color. I feel like that's what was kind of missing with Gorilla Monsoon.
Which we saw that for a brief period in 89 when Tony Schiavone joined Wrestling Challenge and the three of them were working together until Bobby said, fuck this, Tony's trying to take my job. I know what you're doing, Monsoon. And he literally walked off the show. It's one of those moments I'll never forget. But and for a minute, yeah, Tony took over the play-by-play and Bobby and Gorilla were just kind of free to just do whatever they wanted. So I wish they would have kept that. Maybe Vince didn't like it. I don't know what the reasoning for Bobby leaving. And then it just became Tony and Gorilla, which is essentially just two play-by-play guys. So that didn't make sense to me either. But yeah, I mean, I think that would have worked perfect. We saw it with Graves and Byron Saxton and Michael Cole. You know, Graves was able to kind of fuck off and pick on Byron. You know what I mean?
The problem was Saxton didn't have the personality that Gorilla would have had. He just let Graves walk all over him. I feel like, you know, if you would have had Gorilla and Heenan with somebody facilitating that, that could have been really good.
Saxton went the goofy route and he shouldn't have. Cause I do think he has potential. But unfortunately it didn't go that way, but yeah, that's, I think a three-man booth would have worked back then. And like we saw with WCW, with Nitro, you know, when they were pretty essentially the first three-man booth in wrestling.
Now, let's talk about Nitro a little bit. Because you bring up Tony Schiavone. Mm-hmm. And I love Tony Schiavone, but if we're talking about selling in wrestling, there is such a thing as overselling in wrestling. Yeah. Yeah. And Tony Schiavone is the capital offender. When it comes to the oversell, right? Yeah, I mean, how do you feel about Schiavone?
You know, it's funny. When he was in WWF, I thought he was good on primetime. Until we got to SummerSlam, and he was with Jesse the Body Ventura, and he literally screamed the entire fucking show. Like, I like to listen to wrestling at night when I go to sleep because it calms me. I mean, I'm one of those weird people. I'll listen to old shit from the 80s because it brings me back to a time when I was a kid again. I can't, if I put that on my playlist, I'll never sleep because Tony is just over the fucking top, literally yelling and screaming the whole time. I don't know if he had a voice by the end of the event. He should have lost his voice by the time that the main event came, but he was over the top. When he got to WCW, I want to say he toned down a little bit in his style where he wasn't yelling as much, but he still, to your point, was absolutely over the top in the way he called things. Like, this is the greatest freaking shit in the history of wrestling. It's always the running joke on what happened when, but
it's Sting!
Yeah, I know. But he's got passion. right? So, I mean, you got to kind of give him credit for that. I think it's, I don't think it was intentional. I just think he loved wrestling and he was passionate about it until the end when he just, you know, didn't give a fuck.
The thing that's funny about it to me is I know he does like real sports. He does a lot of stuff with the Georgia Bulldogs.
Can you imagine doing that with the Gwinnett Braves when he was doing the, right? You know, the baseball and shit? Like,
I can't imagine.
Free two count. Oh, it's a hit! It's off the ground! Right? It's a home run! Like, okay, Tony, shut.
You gotta bring it down a little bit.
Yeah. You're right.
I'll tell you the Nitro commentator that I love, though, and this kind of goes back to the Vince McMahon. He was booking everything, so he kind of knew the story that he was trying to tell. Eric Bischoff, when he would take over for that second hour of Nitro, I thought was tremendous as the lead play-by-play guy.
Yes. Yes, I will agree with that. I thought, and I don't think he gets enough credit for how well he did during that job. What about Larry Zbyszko?
Oh, the living legend was absolute freaking money, especially when the whole NWO thing kicked in. Because he was just, when it came to the NWO, it was almost like you got babyface Larry Zbyszko, but he was still like living legend douchebag. He would just flip it around on the heels instead of flipping it on the babyfaces. But then the next match would start, right? And he would just go right back to being the heel announcer. But unless it was the NWO, he was always anti-NWO. I love Larry Zbyszko. He was so good.
Yeah, even though he's a douche, he was still a company guy. Like, he still bled WCW. You're not going to come into my house and fuck this shit up. I'm Larry fucking Zbyszko. And he got himself over that. Like,
and there's an interesting psychology to that.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, no, there is. Now, on the flip side of the coin, you have a guy that had no wrestling experience at all. That's Mongo McMichael.
Yeah.
Was that a failed experiment? I mean, how much money did they pay him to bring his little fucking dog in there in the early days? And then he wanted to be one of the workers, which he wasn't bad. I mean, I've seen worse.
But he wasn't good.
No, but he wasn't good. But as a commentator, he brought nothing to
this. And then the crown sin of all. Not only do they make him a wrestler, not only does he have his little dog, they make him a freaking horseman? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, even Paul Roma's like, yeah, that's.
Yeah, right? Even Paul Roma's like, dude, that's fucked.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I don't know whose brainchild that was. Was it Dusty's? I don't know. And then Kevin Green was there too. And, you know, I think Bischoff was infatuated with celebrities and wanted to kind of, you know, use the outside world to try to get a pop like that. You know, with Rodman, with Mongo, with Kevin Green. Who else did they use? They used Carl Malone.
In Eric's defense, though, and of course I'm a Bischoff mark, but... In Eric's defense, those are some of the best celebrity appearances that you've ever seen.
That's true. They even worked the Tonight Show, for fuck's sake. I mean, that's a big deal back then.
Like the Carl Malone thing, like that match is actually really good. And Malone like went seriously, like he went hard at figuring out what he needed to do and how
he didn't want to be a joke. Yeah, he was a professional. He didn't want to be a joke.
Rodman, what if there was ever a natural professional wrestler, it's Dennis freaking Rodman.
True.
I mean, and as much as I hate to say it, David Arquette, all right? And now, I know this was not Bischoff, this was Russo, but I hate the David Arquette thing. I hated the David Arquette thing when it happened. I knew that was basically going to be the death of WCW. It never should have happened, all that happy horse shit. But Vince Russo will tell you, bro, we're still talking about it 20 years later. I'd say it worked. And it's like, it's really, really fucking hard to argue with that.
It really is hard to argue with that because, I mean, even Vince was WWE champion. So, you still talk about it.
And I have respect now for David Arquette. Much more now than I ever did then.
Yes.
I mean, like, that dude has put in the freaking work.
He did. He paid his dues after and not before, which is kind of weird. Like, he came in, was WWE champion 20 years later. He's paying his dues. He was a 40, 50-year-old guy, but he loves the business. So, yeah, I mean, he got in stupid fucking good shape, too. So you got to give him props for that. But back in the day, yeah, I mean, it was a joke. But like you said, we're still talking about it now. So it had a lasting impact.
Right?
You know, and that's what wrestling's all about, right? It's creating memories and moments.
When you try to think about it in that kind of context, you know, it's like, yeah, that was really like the finger poke of doom. That was awful. Yeah. Awful.
Mm-hmm. People will say still hate that shit. Like, purists will still, I bet you Cornette hates that shit.
One of the most outrageous things that you've ever seen in the history of pro wrestling, yeah. Not because of what they did, but because it was the way that those purists view it. Is it was just exposing the business for being fake.
Right.
And that was the problem with it. But here we are still talking about it 20 years later. And it's just like, damn, you know, when you really kind of think about it, how bad of an idea was it?
That's true. That's true. You're exactly right.
But again, to go back to the original topic, what makes that? Tony Schiavone's outrage.
Yep. Yep. The announcer selling the moment properly, which, again, does not happen anymore.
Hello. This is former WWE superstar Tito Santana, and you are listening to the best pro wrestling podcast out there, RTW Rewind. Arriba!
RTW Rewind.
I have a clip that I actually want to play you that I found watching some old prime times. Lord Alfred Hayes called something like I have never seen before. And I've probably seen this match 1,000 times over the years because I love primetime wrestling. But he actually called something legit, almost like you said, like it's a sport. And back in WWE days, that didn't happen. So I'm going to play this for you.
Ravishing Rick Rude still holding the nose now. And he's really upset. Look at that intensity on the face.
Yes, well, all those blows delivered there by Coco are just superficial. They're not going to stop him in his tracks. They're not going to get his shoulders down for three. And they're certainly not going to knock him out. They will hurt, but they'll hurt his pride more than anything. You look at this, you see. Ravishing. He's full of energy, he's full of strength. He was wide open for that shot, mind you. But they're not the blows that's really going to stop Ravishing Rick Rude.
See, I love that call from Lord Alfred Hayes, you know, saying that that's not the strategy that Coco should employ. Like, yeah, it's gonna hurt him for a while, but that's not going to pin him. Like, you don't hear shit like that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that was a brilliant observation and kind of calling it like it's real. Like, yeah, I mean, getting punched in the face sucks. Like, it really does. But, I mean, like, this guy's fucking jacked. He's full of, you know, he's full of adrenaline. You're going to have to do something better than that to get him down to the mat and pin him for a three count. That's a fantastic observation.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. And I think that's one of the things that I like the most about Kevin Kelly and the way that the New Japan team calls things, you know, because they'll break things down like that, you know, yeah. Where... No, they're just trying to soften up this body part for this move that you can expect later on in the match. Right. You know, and everything, it just helps with the narrative going on inside of the story rather than a narrator who's just kind of telling you the story over the top without really having any kind of play-by-play. Like, I feel like Mitchell Cole has a lot of really, really good qualities, but he's a terrible play-by-play announcer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. But I mean, he's had a great run. You got to give him credit for that.
It's been an incredible run, yeah. And he's exactly what Vince wants, which is why, yeah. Whether it's Vic Joseph or the new guy on Monday Night Raw, whose name escapes me right now,
I can't remember his name either. I'm sorry.
Tom Phillips, the new guy down in NXT, they all sound like Mitchell Cole clones. Yeah, every one of them.
They do. Yeah. Yeah, no, you're exactly right on that. JR used to be good at doing that too. You know, just talking about, you know, if you take his legs out, you know, they're, you know, and you ground them, they're not gonna be able to do this, they're not gonna be able to do that. If it's a high flyer, you know, you want to work on his legs or stuff like that, so he can't go to his his bread and butter moves and stuff like that. And that's smart. And that even goes back to just the style of wrestling in general, the fact that they don't even do that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, fuck, if Jericho was smart in AEW, he'd fucking ground and pound every one of those assholes that are flip-flopping and flying around. But yeah, you don't see that shit anymore.
I feel that way about Lance Archer. I love Lance, but like, I don't need to see somebody 6'10" that's like a foot taller than everybody else on the damn roster walking on the tightrope and doing moonsaults. I mean, like, just go out there and be freaking Godzilla, right? Yeah. You know, like, just go out there and just destroy everybody. Everybody dies.
Which is why I see, you know, Killer Cross or Karrion Kross now, and he's killing people. Like, he's the Murder Hawk monster. I mean, he's really destroying people, and that's the way he should be presented. Then you got Keith Lee, who's, you know, to what you said about Lance Archer, you know, Keith Lee is a 300-pound guy working like he's a 220-pounder just because he can. Remember right. when Undertaker said on one of his Broken Skull sessions, I could do all that shit, but they told me right. not to.
Yep.
They told Work me to slow stocks. Down. Paul Heyman said, slow down, slow down, slow down. And if you think you're going slow, go slower. Work your size. Yeah, we know you can do all that fancy shit. You're a fucking fantastic athlete, but that's not you, and that's not the way you want to portray yourself. He took that to heart, and he made a fucking 40-year career out of it.
And it also meant something more when they would turn it on, when Undertaker would go old school.
Or fly over the top without touching right. the ropes. Like, yeah.
You go back and watch some of those like late 70s, early 80s matches of Andre over in Japan. And it's incredible how quick and agile Andre actually was.
He could drop people.
Yeah. You know, but then you see him, you know, like circa WrestleMania 3, and it's like the guy can barely freaking move because of the toll that it took on all of his joints. Right. But he started working smarter instead of harder, and he just started working to his size. And I feel like we're seeing it even now with Will Ospreay, right? Like, you go back and watch like Will Ospreay from 5 years ago, and it's like, Will, you got to slow down. Well, now he's the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And he has slowed down, and it's made him so much better.
Yeah. I mean, Edge was pretty much the same way. I mean, how many ladder matches and tables matches and all that shit can you do? You know, he already had neck issues from early on. He was smart, and he realized that I can't make a career out of the Christian, too. You know, Jeff Hardy is probably the only one that didn't learn from that. But, you know, Edge and Christian slowed down, and they had really, really good runs when Edge became the Radar Superstar and focused more on his character.
Yeah, the ultimate opportunist.
That's right, and not just all the, you know, crazy shit that he used to do. He had the best run of his career. People need to learn from guys like that nowadays, which is why I'm glad he's still around now. But WWE is just so overproduced and micromanaged, and it's a cookie cutter style. You know, they want everybody in NXT to work the WWE style, and it's. Like you said, the announcers are the same way. So yeah, we can take them out. Let's talk about Impact a little bit. Were you a fan of Mike Tenay when he jumped ship and went over there?
I always liked Mike Tenay, kind of in that historian kind of role, to actually just add some kind of context or to remind you of, hey, this is similar to, you know, what the Horsemen did to Dusty back in, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Those historical connections are really, really nice to have when you have a whole lot of history. The problem when he went to Impact, TNA, whatever you want to call it, was there wasn't all that history to pull from, and what he could, what he couldn't, and what he could say, what he couldn't say. So I liked him a lot better in WCW than I ever did when he was with TNA.
No, I agree. I was excited when he'd come on to WCW and talk about the cruiserweight matches and stuff like that, and give us the history of guys from Mexico. And, you know, I learned a lot by listening to him, and he was great in spots. But when you make him the focal point, he is the guy that everyone's listening to. He's the play-by-play announcer. He's the one that's telling the story and setting the tone for everything. Yeah, I don't think, and you're right, with being limited in what he could say, it either he didn't have the ability or he was handcuffed. Either way, it didn't work for me. But I liked when Taz joined him, and I don't know your thoughts on Taz as an announcer. I thought he was good in WWE, but I thought at least when he was in TNA, he kept it together. And then he got Don West, who was screaming all the time too. I mean, He was a hardworking motherfucker, though. Like, yeah, he did so many things for them. I might not be a big fan of his announcing style, but I am a fan of him in general, just on all the shit that he did to help try to build TNA up. But
you'll have to get on with RBV and talk some Don West. Rick is a huge Don West fan. Had a drink with him up at StarCast. And it was like Rick was like cloud freaking nine, man. It was great.
That's cool. Him and TNA early on were just, it was a little bit like they were two polar opposites, obviously.
I did always like Taz as an announcer, mostly because Taz had that credibility. So when Taz would be like, no, he shouldn't do that, he should do this instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had that credibility that you were like, oh, yeah, yeah. Why aren't you doing what Taz is telling you to do?
Right.
You know, and now
workers being commentators in general, sorry to cut you off, but yeah, it's always good to have somebody in the booth like that because they know exactly what it takes to go into the psychology of a match and all that. And they're the best people to pull information from. So I was always a fan of most guys that were in the booth. I won't say they were all great. Stryker, to your point. As a color guy, I thought he was okay. I didn't like him as a play-by-play guy, but early on in WWE, I thought he did a good enough job as a color guy. But he was also more of a fan than he was a worker, and his fandom kind of came out too much when he called and gave information out.
My problem with Matt Stryker, you ever listen to NPR?
Yeah, sometimes.
Matt Stryker is an NPR wrestling announcer. Everything that he says, it has to come across like this, and he's going to explain to you. It sounds like you're at the fucking Masters.
Right.
It's like, dude, turn it up a little bit. Like, I'm watching Lucha Underground. Pentagon's out there, like, breaking people's arms. And now Pentagon is going to put him inside. He's going to wrap the arm around right there. And, you know, it's just like, dude, turn it up a little bit. And now I guess he's doing Impact. So good luck with that Impact.
Josh Matthews.
I hate Josh Matthews. As a commentator, I like Josh as a person. But as a commentator, I was never a fan of Josh's style.
I liked him in WWE, even though we didn't get a lot of him. I thought he was okay until he threw up on a live SmackDown, I think. But playing heel character. A dozen. Yeah, and then he played the heel character in TNA. It didn't work for me then. Didn't work for me when Michael Cole did it. It's that's getting your shit in and getting yourself over at the expense of your talent in the ring. And I've never agreed with that. Which brings me to Jerry Lawler. I know I'm skipping around from errors and stuff like that. I like early Jerry Lawler when he first came into WWF. I didn't like him in the Attitude Era with Jim Ross because he became a parody of himself. I thought he was great at being a heel announcer early on in 93, 94, around then. But come 97, 98, 99, puppies, just fucking.
Just came off as a perverted old man.
Pretty much, which he was. Which, I mean, it's.
Yeah, at least it was true to his character.
Right? Exactly right. But I didn't like the two of them together.
I felt like the difference between the two, though, when you turn your lead announcer, your lead narrator heel, that's the voice of the entire promotion. And if you don't like your lead commentator, if you don't like the voice, you don't like the character of whoever your lead commentator, your lead narrator is, you're not going to like the show, right? I mean, that just seems logical to me. Now, I do feel like heel commentators work. It just has to be a color guy. Like, the King, when he first got started, he was basically just doing color as a heel commentator, and that absolutely worked for me. I'm kind of with you. I always thought that the King was an overrated heel commentator, but he was just clearly not, you know, going for my demographic either, you know.
I mean, he was smart. He was quick-witted. I mean, he knew the business. I mean, he was a booker himself, so, you know, he knew what it took to get in, but at one point it just got annoying, you know what I mean? Like, and JR was trying to kind of reel it in and play the straight man, which, you know, JR did a fabulous job during that time putting people over, but Jerry just became a comedy act. But JR's passion during the Attitude Era, if somebody else were calling some of those moments, I don't think they'd have the same impact as they do now. You know,
he made Mick Foley.
Yeah, absolutely.
He completely made Mick Foley, yeah. Whether it was the sit-down interview, whether it was God is my witness, he's broken in half, somebody stopped the damn match, like whatever, you know, like Jim Ross just completely made Mick.
Yeah. Yep, and you could almost credit Tony Schiavone and Eric Bischoff as well for getting people to tune into his title win and really make him. But no, you're right. JR was very instrumental. And I think he took it's almost like a pet project of his. Because both Jim and Mick wanted to prove Vince wrong, because obviously we've heard the stories over the years that Vince didn't understand what Mick Foley was all about. He didn't think he had anything to bring to the table other than he was a crazy son of a bitch, or somebody got him into WWF, and maybe it was Jim Ross that got him in. I think Jim may have been in talent at that point, but I'm not sure. But Vince just wanted him in shit brown tights and a mask because, you know, that's his vision for him. And Mick got that shit over. And Jim, like you said, helped him along the way. And they were both out to prove a point. Like, dude, I know how to entertain. I know how to be a professional wrestler and get over.
And it also helped that Jim Ross was kind of an extension of Stone Cold too. You know what I mean? Like, you knew that Stone Cold and Jim Ross were boys.
Yeah.
And so then you had the dynamic between Jim Ross and Vince, and they'd kind of go at each other. And, you know, JR did not necessarily try to be the straight man in any way, shape, or form. It was Stone Cold. Great shit.
It was great shit. Plus, given the fact that, you know, Vince fired him a couple times during the whole period too. I mean, I don't think they had the best relationship at that point either. So watching Vince get his ass kicked by Stone Cold probably, you know, brought a smile to Jim's face during all that. So that was, you know, his emotion of the moment. Just taking over, because who doesn't want to see Vince McMahon get his ass kicked, right?
Right.
But again, to Vince's credit, he was a fucking fantastic heel. Without Vince, that the whole Austin McMahon thing obviously never would have happened, but I mean, it wouldn't have had the same impact that it did if it was somebody else. And they've tried to replicate it, and it's never been the same.
Going through the last year and a half or so, going through the pandemic era, what have you noticed about commentary? Because it's very difficult for the commentators to, they're doing two different jobs at the same time. They're reacting to what they're seeing in the ring, and they're reacting to the audience. When you take half of that equation away, how have you felt about commentary inside of the pandemic era?
That's lackluster. I mean, it's hard to get behind anything. I mean, taking the crowd away, you almost feel like the announcers even like, we don't want to fucking do this shit. Right. You know, they're not hyping up this. And that should have been a time where they were focused more on character development and building stories. And instead, they're still calling what they're seeing. And, you know, without the fans' response, it was just like, why are we even here? So it's almost like they were phoning it in my opinion.
I know you're not necessarily a big Japanese wrestling fan.
I wouldn't say, I'd actually say not a fan at all, to be quite honest. Okay.
Have you ever watched a show with Japanese commentary?
I've seen matches here and there, but I mean, it's not something I would sit down and watch for, you know, an hour or anything like that. Like, I've seen clips or stuff on YouTube.
I think you would be surprised. I think you would get into it.
Okay.
Because their enthusiasm is so contagious. I mean, because they get going and everything is super, super exciting, and then they just start screaming it all my night. It's great. I love listening to Japanese commentary, and I have no idea what they're saying. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's completely, because it's all about that emotion. It's like listening to Mauro Ranallo for like, you know, 2.5 hours, you know, it's like, holy shit, this guy's going to have a freaking heart attack just calling this match.
Hey, this is Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net, the Rad Turtles Wrestling Podcast. It's amazing to me that turtles have the ability to speak, let alone host wrestling podcasts. I guess that's what makes them rad.
RTW Rewind.
Let me pick your brain on this just for a second, because that's an interesting topic. Why are the Japanese commentators so over the top, but the fans themselves are so low key?
Hmm.
Like they'll cheer high spots, you know, or
absolutely.
For most of the time, they're quiet.
I do. My oldest daughter just sent me a text message that says, "Can you repeat that one more time, a little louder, for the people in the back?"
that's hilarious.
That's great. That's great. The Japanese people are very, very different in the way that they are accustomed. Obviously, one of the things that's very different in Japanese wrestling is it's not necessarily face and heel dynamic. It's more sports presentation. And so you have more of a positioning kind of battle. Mm-hmm. And the Japanese people will pull for whoever the underdog is, regardless if they're a good guy or a bad guy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing with Japanese wrestling, if you watch the main events, those people get rocking. When Okada's out there, when Tanahashi's out there, when Ibushi's out there, those people make a lot of noise. But the way that the Japanese build their cards is very, very different to the American audience, because they will start with the least important match of the night, and that will be the first match. And right. then they build to the most important match of the night. And so the fans get more riled up, and you're as you're going up the roller coaster, right? Whereas when you look at the Western presentation, you have this constant kind of roller coaster ebb and flow. That's where the cool down match came from. It's just a very, very different kind of presentation. And it's like, you know, the Japanese audience, they'll get into it, but they wait until it's three quarters of the way through the show and you're getting to, you know, the top two, three, four matches on the card.
What are you more of a fan of? Are you more of a fan of the way they build from low tier to high tier? Or, you know, do you like the U.S. presentation where you want to start out with a hot match to set the tone? And then, like you said, go up and down from there. You're going to have your popcorn matches, but what do you like better?
I prefer the Japanese presentation, but it's just because it feels more sports-like to me. Right. Mm-hmm. Like if you're watching a UFC card, you might have a match that's really, really good as the third fight on an 8-match card, but it was still only the third most important match on the show. Right. Yeah. You know what I mean? So there are places for people to elevate themselves inside of the card. There's nothing that says you can't go out there and have a great match as the third match on the show. It's just the level of importance going into the show. So I'd rather, you know, just get wound up and then I've got to come down after the show than have the promotion themselves try to cool me off. And then I have to get back into the show.
Right. Well, then you look at what Jericho said on his appearance on Stone Cold's Broken Skull Sessions, where, you know, he felt like he had the best program of the year with Kevin Owens, and they were the third match at WrestleMania, and he took offense to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, originally that was being pitched as the Universal Championship match.
Right, right.
You know?
Still, I mean, if it, I understand, like, your place in the card, your place in the role. He is the main eventer. I get that, but either way, you still go out there and you do your job to the best of your ability. Where does it matter where you are on the card? You're doing your job. Is that an ego and a pride thing then?
Absolutely. Especially when you get to the level of Chris freaking Jericho. You're talking about one of the goats. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Jericho's career, when we actually stop and really look at it, is just fascinating.
Oh, we could do a whole show just on that, because I learned so much watching him in Broken Skull that I didn't even know about him. And I've been a huge Chris Jericho fan, but even my wife was watching with me. She's like, he's a fucking smart guy. Well, she didn't say fuck, but adding a little salt and pepper to that. But like, he is a brilliant guy at getting himself over, like more than 90% of anybody in the business right now.
And there is so much that they didn't even talk about on that show. Like, have you seen Super Liger?
No, I have not.
You don't know what Super Liger is?
No.
In the early to mid 90s, there was clearly, you know, Jushin Thunder Liger.
Right.
And then this other guy showed up, and it was Super Liger. And he was basically dressed in a all white Jushin Thunder Liger costume.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this crazy long blonde flowing hair coming out of it. And sure enough, it's Chris Jericho.
It's just Chris Jericho. Wow.
Yeah, no Super kidding. Liger. So we got Super Liger versus Jushin Liger.
So even back in the day, he knew exactly, you know, he was ahead of everybody else. Yeah, yeah, even building up that feud with, I know we're getting off topic again, but even building up that feud with Goldberg on
and
his own.
It's still going. I still think that is a money match.
It could still happen. Yes, I mean, could.
Because who screwed him out of that main event with Kevin Owens?
Goldberg, yeah. Goldberg did.
Fucking yeah, Goldberg.
That's a good point. Maybe it'll happen in Saudi Arabia next year.
Yeah. Rick and I actually talked about that it'll probably happen in Saudi Arabia. I do think there is money in a Chris Jericho versus Bill Goldberg match.
I absolutely agree. I mean, that's a 20-year payoff, but fuck, at least you're getting a payoff. Goldberg wouldn't sell it even back in the day. At least you'd get him he might not even sell it now, but I think he's smart enough now that, you know, to do good business. I mean, I think he's smarter now than he was back then. Back then, he was kind of ego driven and he didn't, I don't think he properly understood the business and what it took to sell an angle. They could have printed money back in the day with the shit that Jericho was doing to him that he wouldn't even sell. Yeah. Jericho was fucking brilliant to get himself over at the expense of Goldberg.
The thing that's incredible about Chris Jericho's career to me is while you can look at, you know, Lionheart Chris Jericho, you can look at Y2J, you can look at Suit and Tie Jericho, you can look at Festival of Friendship Jericho, you can look at Inner Circle Jericho. It's all the same character.
Yeah.
Like it's all one continuous story arc. It's not like, you know, we're going to end the book here and start a new one. It's all one continuous story. And that's just incredible to me.
It really is. It really is. And I've read all of his books and he's fascinating. Like you can make it. And people are like, you can't put him over Stone Cold or Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan. Why not?
Have you ever met the guy?
Once. I actually met him before his first return to WWE. After he left for a while and got put in the fucking trash can, he came back with the coiffed and his fucking haircut. Like he was doing a charity signing at a random fucking place when I lived up north. It's Bloomfield, Connecticut, or East Granby, Connecticut, one of the two. Hadn't been around in forever. Was doing a charity event and like 2,000 people were there. It was amazing. Like that people, he's like, I can't believe all these people still fucking remember me. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're Jericho. Like this is before he was world champion and all that. Well, right. I guess he was undisputed champion at one time before that, but he wasn't at the level like he was, you know, at Suit and Tie Jericho, which is my favorite period. But he was a super, super friendly guy. I took the time to talk to everybody for 3-4 minutes and, you know, we're just having a good time with everybody. So, I mean, I have nothing bad to say about him personally. I just, now that I know what I know about him, he's a fucking genius.
He is incredible. He's my best friend, in case you didn't know.
Okay.
When I met Chris Jericho 2-3 years ago, as we were going through the line, this was at a Fozzy concert, right?
Mm-hmm.
Me and my oldest daughter, we went. And everybody could ask Chris Jericho one question. And that was it, one question. And so she asked him where Jericho came from, which I thought was an interesting story. It came from the band Halloween. They had a song called The Walls of Jericho, and yep. Jericho's a big fan. That's where that came from. And I asked him to be my best friend, and he said, of course, because, you know, Jericho has such a great reputation with his best friend, so he's now my best friend, Chris Jericho.
Awesome.
He is he that dude was stone cold drunk at 11 o'clock in the morning.
I mean
that dude, he is a fucking rock star.
He really is.
I mean, to the very nth degree. Love it. Yeah. My best friend, Chris Jericho. You bet.
That's awesome. Well, I'm so happy that you're best friends with him. Yeah, I talked to Joe Feeney about him and Joe calls him Drunkico, but
he's a hell of a nice guy. He really,
really,
is.
Really nice guy. But he really did want to be a rock star and he did it. I mean, he's done everything he's ever wanted to do. Which
he plotted it all out, man.
Not many people can say that. I can't believe he's even kept fucking notes on every single match he ever had.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's...
The one that got me, I had asked him on Twitter once if he still had all of the Lucha masks that he took when he was in WCW. Remember when he was the Lucha mask collector? Yeah. And he does. Yeah. He still has them all, like, in a closet.
That's crazy. That's
like, that's freaking great.
That is. That level of dedication, I'm telling you. That also proves that he's still a fan.
Right?
He loves the business, and he's also smart, because he knows he could probably sell that shit for some pretty good money one day, man. Right?
Yeah, just think of all the masks he had. How many luchadors did he unmask in WCW? It had to be like a half a dozen.
Pretty much.
It was crazy. I mean, like, Psychosis and Juventud and
yeah.
On down the line, he was the mask collector. It was a great gimmick. Just great
it really was. Stuff. It really was. So what do you think? What do you think is lacking in all the organizations nowadays? Obviously, they're not. Are they not putting over the talent properly? Because I mean, JR tries, but JR doesn't even know half the fucking moves. Or it seems like you don't even know what the fuck's going on with the stories either. And we have to rely on fucking dipshit
Excalibur.
So,
and I like Excalibur. I always liked him in PWG.
Okay, that's fair. I don't like it in AEW.
The AEW something it does seem very, very off. I feel like the biggest thing that is missing today is authenticity. Mm-hmm. Everything feels so rehearsed. Everything feels so scripted. Everything feels so practiced. There's just not that sense of authenticity and emotion that comes with what I should be getting from my commentary team.
Because their main their sole purpose is, yes, you want to put the company over. If you do have something to promote, like a pay-per-view or, you know, your Twitter or whatever, that's fine. There's always a time and place for that.
But you need to promote your talent.
You need to put your talent over. And that's exactly right. That is rule number one. Like, Ben told me rule number one about wrestling psychology is put the heat on the heels and get the babies over. That's rule number one when it comes to wrestling psychology. Rule number one, when it comes to your announcers, put the fucking talent over.
That might be rule number two.
What's rule number one?
One, as told to me by Jim Ross.
Okay.
Never make the baby face look stupid.
Ah. So you're best friends with Jim Ross too?
No, I'm not best friends with Jim Ross. He's a cranky old man. but I have had a conversation with him. Number one. Never make the baby face look stupid because people don't like somebody that is stupid.
That's true. That's a good point. Now, what role does the heel commentator have when it comes to that? Because obviously they have to put over the heels, but you know, back in the day, you know, you have Bobby Heenan or Jesse Ventura, you know, saying Chico Santana and the Flying Burrito and all that shit too. So, I mean, where do you fall when it comes to that?
What makes a good heel?
Someone that can aggravate you and irritate you.
Right. But how do you do that? He has to have a justification. He, in his own mind, he has to think that he is right.
True.
That's to me what makes a good heel. To me, that is the role of the heel commentator, to supply the alternate narrative that says, you know, you may not agree with his methods, but he's doing the right thing,
right?
In his own mind. Like, to a delusional heel is the best heel, but he has to have some kind of a justification. Otherwise, he's just a dick.
Right. And that's where I think Jesse was actually really good at, you know, mm-hmm. playing off of Vince. Jesse was the true blue heel. Didn't make fucking jokes. He always claimed by telling like it is.
Yep.
So he made himself to the, you know, he put himself over to the fans. I know what I'm talking about.
You may not like it, McMahon, but that man's trying to feed his family.
Yeah.
And he makes more money if he wins this championship. So he will do whatever it takes to win that championship to supply food for his family. And it's like, wow, suddenly I don't feel so bad. Like, you know, like,
no.
Go get him.
Yeah. No, you're right. And that doesn't happen anymore. And, you know, I am a big Corey Graves fan, but I would love to see him thrive somewhere else because he is a very, very smart guy. He is very polished. He's very good. He's a fantastic talker. He's a pro's pro. Mm-hmm. Like, you listen to him on After the Bell. I like listening to After the Bell because he gets a little more leeway to kind of do whatever he wants. I would love to see him somewhere else to see what he could do. Because I think he has that talent. And they put a lot of faith in him, too, to give him all those different shows on the network and all that.
My favorite thing about Corey Graves is his feud with Sasha Banks. And nobody talks about it. But it is. It's very Hulk Hogan and Bobby Heenan. Like, regardless of where Sasha is on the ledger, Corey just thinks that she's awful.
Yeah.
And I love it. That's my favorite thing about Corey Graves.
Yeah, that, and you know, he loves Mandy Rose's ass, but who doesn't, right?
Well, I mean,
yeah. So
good-blooded American male. I
mean, you said it. As we wrap it up here, I appreciate you coming on. There's so many more topics I'd love to delve into with you, because I love to pick your brain, because you are such a smart guy and a very handsome man as well. So
yeah,
what the fuck is going on with my camera? Did you see that?
It's like, yeah, I think there's something's going on with your keying, with your green screen.
Or I've just downloaded too much porn. I don't know.
Well, there is that. I mean, yeah. you don't have to download it anymore, man. Like, you can stream everything now.
What, really?
Yeah. That's what they tell me.
We need to talk off air about that. Yeah.
Private mode.
Where can people find you on social media, and let everybody know what the fine work you're doing here with Hitting the Marks and HMG?
You can find me across all social media platforms at Not Jargo, for all things Jargo, whether it's Hitting the Marks, whether it's Destino, whether it's my new podcast that's going to be coming soon, that's called The Conclusion.
I can't wait for that. I really can't.
I appreciate that. I've also been doing some work with John Paz over at the Two Man Power Trip. That's going up there. Turnbuckle Talk frequently goes up there. MichaelJargo.com. That's kind of your one stop for all things Jargo every day, with the top tens and whatnot. And keep your eyes open for The Conclusion. As you can see, we're kind of in the process of tearing apart the locker room studios. And within the next couple of weeks, we'll have the 203 getting all set up, and looking forward to it, man. Getting to rewire and do everything exactly the way that I want it is going to be incredible, but it might take a little while. So, you know, I'm about due for one of those breaks myself.
God bless your wife, man, because she's going to put up with all that wonderful OCD, right? So.
Oh, man, dude, you have no idea. This woman.
She is a saint.
I have no idea to put up with my shit.
Yeah.
Holy crap, dude. But it's funny, because I got home this morning and she's reading through my top 10 when I get home. And I'm just like, oh boy, what's going to be the topic of conversation this morning? And you know what she says to me? Kota Ibushi versus Jeff Cobb. And I was like, God damn it. I love this woman. God,
I love you.
God, I love this woman.
She completes you. Yeah, absolutely.
Very much so.
I love your daily thoughts on Facebook, by the way. So
find yourself a woman that'll wake you up at 3:30 in the morning for Wrestle Kingdom, and I guarantee you will have a happy relationship going.
That's exactly right. Dude, I really appreciate you being here. I know our schedules don't always line up, and you put time aside for me, so I do respect you very much and appreciate that. We got to do this again sometime for sure, because I like our banter and our chemistry, and I think we could really break down some good stuff here in the coming months. So we'll definitely have to get back together, maybe on a bi-monthly or bi-weekly thing. And
yeah, man, just drop me a line. We'll set something up.
You guys can follow me on Twitter at RadRobGaming. I also have a Twitch gaming channel, twitch.tv/RadRobGaming. I stream every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central, every Saturday night at 6 p.m. Central. Also, you can check out my YouTube page. It is RadRobGaming, or youtube.com/RadRobGaming. I have thousands of videos up. If you're an old school retro fan, if you're listening to retro wrestling, you probably like retro gaming. And that's what I'm all about, because, well, I'm just plain fucking old. If you want to check out my t-shirt store on prowrestlingtees.com/RadTurtlesWrestling, we have several t-shirts on sale for you guys. Anytime you do purchase a shirt, I will shout you out on the show just to thank you for donating to the Rad Baby Diaper Fund. We'll be back next week for another edition of RTW Rewind right here on the Hameen Media Group. Take care, guys.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod, and you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind, right here on the Rad Rob Radio Network.